Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 108 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And we have some exciting news for the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. Thank you to our new sponsor, The Smoke Sheet, which is a weekly newsletter that curates everything happening in the national barbecue scene. Every week, you get to read about new joints and closures across the country, event listings for the largest events in barbecue, podcasts and book recommendations, and a recipe of the week that you could make at home. The Smoke Sheet was founded by Ryan Cooper, also known as Barbecue Tourist, and Sean Ludwig, founder of NYC Barbecue. You probably remember Ryan from a previous episode on the podcast where we talked about his many barbecue road trips. That was really cool. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Ryan and Sean have been traveling for years, trying the best barbecue joints around the country, and now they bring their expertise to highlight what matters most for barbecue fans and industry veterans alike. Sign up now at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. And follow The Smoke Sheet on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. It's The Smoke Sheet. The Smoke Sheet is barbecue news worth consuming. And I have been with The Smoke Sheet since day one. I signed up day one, and every week I get the email, and it's chock full of information I didn't know about things, events, and that's one thing too that I've always wanted to stay on top of is barbecue events that's coming up in the future, because I always feel like I hear about something either a couple days before it's happening or after it's happened, and I always feel like I miss out. So The Smoke Sheet's worth signing up just for that alone, but there's a ton of information, news information that you didn't know about, people to listen to that I didn't know about that aren't my podcast or that are other podcasts. I'm super excited that we're doing this partnership, and I definitely think it's worth checking out. And in this episode, I get a chance to talk to Pat Martin from Martin's Barbecue in Tennessee. This one's really cool, and I've been trying to get a hold of Pat. We've been going back and forth and trying to do this. This was recorded in November, and he was coming back from the Savannah Food and Wine Festival, where he cooked a whole hog with Sam Jones. They each took half of the hog. He explains that, and we talk about that. But he's driving, so the audio isn't 100%. At the very beginning, it's a little more crackly, and then as it goes on, it gets a lot clearer. But it's what you learn in this one, and what the knowledge that Pat imparts, it's definitely worth listening to. He talks about the early days for him. He talks about the struggles. He's dead honest about everything, and how he even talks later on in the interview about how this can all go away, and that he is definitely humble and appreciative of everything, because this, in a snap of a finger, it could go away. There's a lot of business information that he gives about opening barbecue joints, about opening restaurants, about employees, about chances that you take, and he also, it's an interesting, he goes into the real estate aspect of being a barbecue joint owner for himself, and that's really important information for a lot of people that are going into business. And then we talk about his new venture, Hugh Babies, which is a burger joint, and it just sounds fabulous, and he's expanding that. So it's just, there's a lot of information talking to Pat. If you've ever heard Pat, or if you've ever read about Pat, it's always a great conversation. And if you're digging these, please subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any of them. I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with tons more content, connections to everything that I do at Kevin's BBQ Joints. Thank you so much. Enjoy.
I left Savannah about an hour and a half ago.
Oh, okay. How was that?
It was good. Same when they had like this east, they wanted to do east versus west, and Sam and I both were vehemently against the versus part. So Carolina and West Tennessee, whole hog. So we cooked a hog last night. He took one half and I took the other.
Have you ever done it that way?
Yeah, he and I have done that way a couple times. You know, usually when actually we've done it more than a couple times, but we've had to do it a couple times where we only cook one hog because they don't have enough people to justify us cooking two.
Gotcha.
And it would just be wasteful, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think I saw some stuff on Instagram, some overnight stuff, somebody dancing in the street or something.
We had a burn barrel out in the middle of the street, and everybody who was, you know, going out to the clubs and bars just decided that was their burn barrel, too. They were going to stop by and hang out with us all night. I'm talking about like 100-plus feet, kind of a nuisance.
It does sound like it might get out of hand.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to make this, and especially since you're driving, make it semi-brief, but I wanted to talk a little bit about your history, as well as talk about, like, the fact do you have 9 restaurants now, or is it 8?
I just opened up my 8th on 3rd.
And then talk about a little bit about the burger place, and about, also Slug Burgers. Sounds really weird.
Yeah, Slug Burgers is Yeah, sure.
First, you didn't start off in barbecue nor in food, did you?
No, I was. I'll take you back. I was always real into cooking. The women of my family, both our families from Corinth, Mississippi. Okay. Both sets, my mom's parents, my mom's side and my dad's side. I was born in Memphis, and we moved up north when I was young. My dad's dad, you know, come home for Christmas, and then as soon as school would get out, we'd come back home for the summer. You know, and he died. And so he died when I was just getting into high school, so we moved back home. And then I finished high school, and during high school, nobody in my family barbecued, but we grilled a lot, and they were very methodical people in my family, the men in my family. Never had any gas grills. They always used, chimney starters, and same thing, like shine your shoes. You know, they shine their own shoes. It was a way you did it. Change your own oil. It was a way you did it, you know. So, like any other boy, you always want to be like the man in your family, and I guess that's kind of what got me really into it. I think what got me into the love of it was grilling, and I think I was in the ninth grade, which would have been 87.
Okay.
I bought Chris Schlesinger's book, Thrill of the Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the little bookstore I bought it at down in Corinth, and anyway, I really got into, we were into barbecue from a standpoint of eating. Like, eating barbecue was, our farm's 60 miles out of Memphis, 65, and born in Memphis, it's kind of in our DNA.
Okay.
But cooking wasn't, my dad didn't cook barbecue. So anyway, I bought this book and started grilling through that, and he had a chapter in there about cooking whole hog, and I graduated high school. And basketball there, my Uncle Hugh Baby, which my hamburger place is named after.
Okay.
He played basketball there. And I wasn't good enough. I was a good little player, but I wasn't good enough to go play. But I knew the coach at Mississippi State, and I thought I might go down there and be like a student assistant coach, just go to state. And kind of last minute, I went 45 minutes up the road to a little small Christian school to see if I could walk on.
Okay.
I talked to the coach, and, they only gave scholarships, and they'd already given those. And so anyway, academically, it was a disaster. I was, outside of a controlled environment for the first time, and found beer, failed out the first semester. And so anyway, but the one thing about that was the name of that school is Freed Hardeman University, and it's just south of Jackson, Tennessee. The one thing about that was, the first, couple days, few days, definitely within the first week I was there, I went to go see where I could barbecue sandwich, and I went to this place called Thomas and Webb, and I went up, there's this little window.
Okay.
And I ordered, and all he did was turn to this side and pick this thing up, and there was a hog sitting there. I mean, it was right there.
That's crazy.
Coolest thing in the world, and he's like, you want slaw on it? Anyway, his name was Harold Thomas. Mr. Harold and I became friends, and I just had to learn how to do that. And he was a very kind, gentle man, and he taught me everything he knew. And he let me hang around his pits and his pit house really every couple times a week. I'd go down and, study down there and all that. And then I started cooking for my friends and started cooking for fraternities and sororities, fraternities from other schools. And I was a finance econ major, and I was going to do the same thing my dad did. That's why we left Memphis. My dad was a bond trader in Memphis.
Huh.
And he took a job in New York City. So we lived out in Connecticut when I was little. And I grew up around that business and was comfortable with it. And so that's what I was going to do, because that's what my dad did.
Were you cooking whole hog for the people at the school? Did you build the pits and stuff?
Yeah, I'd build a pit wherever we went. Okay. Well, the big thing what kicked it off, my dad had a fish fry on our farm that all our whole community comes every year on Columbus Day.
Okay.
And I went to college in 1990. In 1991, before our fish fry, I told Dad I wanted to cook a hog. And Mr. Hill got me the hog, and Freed Hardeman was building a new gymnasium, so I stole a bunch of bricks. stole a road, those big road close signs to flip it. like a big giant spatula.
Oh, that makes sense.
You know, that was the first hog I cooked, so I have pictures of it. So anyway, that just became a thing, you know, and I just was hooked on it. I just thought that I would go, you know, go through my life and have a successful career trading bonds, and then I don't know what I was thinking, dude, and make a bunch of money, come back and open up some barbecue joint with no risk. You know? And let me tell you, it did not work out that way.
So what put you in that direction then?
So life, you know, life hit. Freed was a Church of Christ school. They kicked me out for drinking beer. And the second time they kicked, the first time they kicked me out, my dad took me to Chicago and got me a job on the Board of Trade, Chicago Board of Trade.
Okay.
And I had a little bitty apartment, and I was cooking hogs for, you know, the executive bosses and all that.
That's so great.
And I loved it because I've got ADD real bad, and it was pre-internet, and I was just going to go back there and work there. And the guy who ran that division for Merrill Lynch, Financial Futures and Options, told me not to come back. This thing called the internet was coming, and it was going to change everything. Right. And so I didn't go back. I transferred into a school in Nashville called Lipscomb University, and I finished at Lipscomb, and then I took a job with Nations Bank, which is now Bank of America. Took a job with Nations Bank in Charlotte, because I never wanted to live back up north again or do any of that. And so that was the only option I could do what I was doing, which was institutional bond trading, fixed income trading and sales. Was you only went to New York, London, Tokyo, and then Bank of America or Nations Bank came on board in Charlotte.
Okay.
Try to give you somewhat of a cliff notes. Got my girlfriend pregnant. She had a miscarriage. We got married. You know, I stayed in Charlotte. Then we switched over to sales and moved to Memphis. Moved back to Memphis. Trying to get to Nashville. She was a songwriter in Nashville. And we ended up getting divorced about 5.5 years. She's a good person. We just, you know, made a bad decision.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, man, I sat there and I didn't want to move. I thought about going to culinary school, but I really wasn't looking to be a chef. I wanted to be a restaurateur. And I was, you know, typical divorce. I was living in my house by myself. My buddy moved in with me. And no money, depressed. So I was cooking for myself every night. And I got Julia Child's book to learn all the different classical techniques that I could learn.
Which is smart.
And so I was doing that a lot, just in my house, making stocks and, you know, basic. Learning how to braise, blah, blah, blah. And I ended up remarrying a couple of years later. And my wife, Martha, was like, you need to do this. You love to cook. You love barbecue. You need to open up a place. And that's easier said than done when you don't have any money, you know. And I didn't want to go to my dad, and I didn't want to be that guy that milked my parents on something. So I was this, you know, the stupid idiot that I always say that was at the, you know, cooked my friends whatever I was cooking. They're like, you should open up a place one day. And,
yeah, everyone says that.
I did. So I, my wife was working at juvenile court in Nashville. We had Wyatt, my son, he was 11 months old, when we opened, not when I started getting it in process, but I had started a hardscape landscape company, and my guys flipped my trailer, and it was good money, not great money. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. You know, it was just living.
It was just something, yeah.
And I would say that they flipped the trailer. I went down to this little taco place, and they had evicted the guys, and it was above a mechanic shop. And I don't know what happened, man. I was... think God stepped in. I just blurted out to this guy that I would take it. I was like, what are you going to do with it? You're going to find somebody else. And I was like, I'll take it. I didn't even ask him what the rent was. 1,000 square feet, had about it might have been 1,100. It had 10 tables in it, and it was like a little 300 square foot kitchen.
Okay.
He wouldn't let me cook whole hogs there. He wouldn't let me build a pit. I only had 9 parking spaces. So I did what I could do. I would rent this buddy's on the weekends, and we would mess around with that a little bit, cooking hogs. But anyway, I got Martin's off the ground. I started with one employee, this guy named Bo, and who's still kind of with me.
What were you cooking, pork shoulder then, or?
Yeah, I was cooking whole shoulders with skin on.
Okay.
You know, spare ribs, just the usual.
Yeah.
And so I started Martin's with $65,000 line of credit that I extended later to get some more. I didn't borrow enough money to get it off the ground.
Okay.
But it worked. So that's that. That's how that started.
But that was that. Is that location? That's not. Is that Nolensville? That's not Nolensville, is it?
No. In 2010, I moved across the street. A guy that was a customer of mine would come in, and he had bought the shopping center across the street. And he offered to do a build-to-suit. So he built, designed my own building, did everything, put my hog pit in there, built a 2,400-square-foot restaurant. And, man, just, I'll never forget thinking how bad I had screwed up. Like, it felt so huge. I also, at that time, had partnered with a guy named Mike Bodner. Because I knew I didn't know anything about running the restaurant. I really wanted to learn how the mechanics of running a restaurant and really becoming a really good operator. I knew I wanted to grow Martin's. I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't have some thing in mind. I just know I wanted to be better than what I was.
Yeah.
And Mike has been an unbelievable mentor for me. And as far as restaurant operations go, it was probably the best decision I ever made. He was an old Wendy's franchisee way back in the day.
When did it start to feel like this is something that's going to really be happening? Like it was actually something that people were starting to take wind on and understanding that this is a special place. And like, if Whole Hog wasn't done, was Whole Hog even done in that area?
Oh, no. No. Tennessee is a very long state. It's 8 hours on one side and the other.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
The three stars in the state actually represent how different. It could be three different states. That's how geographically different they are, you know. In West Tennessee, Whole Hog was not a part of Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
And frankly, they didn't really care. They just wanted a good barbecue sandwich. They didn't really care what it was. It's taken me, had my 12-year anniversary, and it's taken me probably at least 10 of the 12, not 9 of the 12, where I've got customers actually coming in now that they're educated now. Nolensville is 30 minutes out of Nashville. It's about 25 minutes out of Nashville. I got the feeling that I was getting traction because people from Nashville were driving out to eat with me. You know, then you turn around after 6 months or whatever, and you're into the summertime, because we opened in October. You start getting into March or April, and there's Saturday night. We'd close 8 o'clock. I was closed on Sundays and Mondays, and I was open from 11 to 8. Tuesday through Saturday. And man, at, you know, freaking 5:30, there'd be a line 40, 50 people deep.
That's crazy.
In that little building, going out the door, waving down the sidewalk. That's when I didn't ever remember consciously thinking, boy, I've hit it, because my bank account surely didn't feel that way. I was proud of, you know, the fact that, you know, you created all this with your own hands and your mind, and these, you know, the people saying that line appreciated enough to sit there and wait. That always weirded me out.
And also, were people pretty impressed with the Whole Hog process? Like, people, because it's such an unusual thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, but in my first place, I had this side place, and they didn't see that then, the times that we did do it there.
Okay.
Because it was off to the side, and I wasn't smart enough to think about getting credibility for what I was doing.
Gotcha.
In other words, shoving it in front of their face so they could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, oh, wow, look, this guy's cooking a whole body. I was just... This was just economics for me. This was making a living. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was very romantic about barbecue and still am today. But at the time, I wasn't thinking about press or how I could get my name out. I didn't know how. I was just serving the best food I could, making sure I ran out every day. And that was that. When I moved across the street and built my new place, I stuck that pit in the middle of the dining room.
Yeah.
And they had to see it.
That's true. What are you doing? One pit, one hog a day?
I was doing a hog for lunch, and on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, hog would take out through the whole day, and then I would cook shoulders to like night at night on weekends to like make sure I didn't run out of pork. And now, whenever I build a restaurant, I don't ever build one without at least two hoagie bits in it.
And then when did you start bring on the hoe cakes? Was that something from the beginning?
So Bo, my first cook, when I was going through the menu, the one thing Nashville doesn't have, or Middle Tennessee for that matter, doesn't have a barbecue tradition. There's barbecue all over it, but there's nothing in there like, you know, North Alabama has white sauce, you know, little microcultures that lend to the whole big story of barbecue.
Exactly.
But they do have this one thing where traditionally all the barbecue joints in around Nashville serve their barbecue on hoe cakes.
Huh.
And I knew that, but when I was doing my menu, I wasn't thinking about doing that at all. It just never consciously crossed my mind. But one day, Bo was like, man, you can't open a barbecue joint in Nashville and not have hoe cakes, barbecue on top of it. So it's like, all right. And I've always been real hell bent about slaw being on a sandwich, and all that hoe cake, barbecue on a hoe cake is just a open face, yeah, you know, sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it on there, and I said, well, I'm gonna put slaw on the goddamn sandwich. I mean, I'm gonna put slaw on the on top of it.
Exactly.
And Bo named it. I was like, what are we gonna call it? And Bo's like, let's call it a redneck taco. So we named it before we actually ever even went and made it.
Oh, that's so funny.
And why I say that is because you can't pick that thing up like a taco. The whole thing breaks apart on you. So, you know, the name stuck. I couldn't change it. And so it's a redneck taco, but it's really not a taco.
No, it's not. Not at all. So at what point did you think, like, how many employees did you have at that time?
Oh, nine.
Did you have merchandise and all that stuff? You didn't have any of that stuff, did you?
I had a couple t-shirts and caps. I had one cap and like two t-shirts or something, but that was it.
Was there a point like when like Guy Fieri came, like was there something that like kind of put you guys more on the map regionally or even across the United States?
The first thing I remember was, I would say around 07 or 08, Bon Appetit, it was Andrew Knowlton, named us the top five barbecue joints in America.
I remember that.
And that was like the first bit of national press we got. And we started getting local press pretty quickly. And the first bit of national press we got, and man, I hate to sound, I don't, there were a few more after that, and I don't even remember what they were.
Yeah.
But that really started picking it up. And then, you know, around 2009, is when the TV show started coming. And back then, I say back then like it was forever ago, but it kind of was.
It was.
In food television, like if you were on a television program, your local press picked it up and mm-hmm. they ran with it. Now, it's like nobody, I mean, I hate to say nobody watches it.
But there's so much. There's a lot.
It's white noise, yeah, and there's it just is not what it was. So, but, you know, like, yeah, Guy, definitely Andrew Zimmern, like, all of them came and shot, you know, like, boom, boom, boom. And that makes your, back then, that would make your local community real proud of you because Nashville was getting on attention on the map. And so, yeah, those things were all big helps. And then it's just all one big recipe, you know, the food and wine festivals and, you know, all that. And we just, you know, collectively, they all added.
What made you want to like to go to those outside? I guess were you being asked a number of times, "Hey, come out to this festival or come out to this," and did you turn them down for a while?
Yeah, well, when you're getting asked to go as a pit master or barbecue cook, you're getting asked to go to festivals that only chefs were ever traditionally asked to go. You know, so you know that was always special, but when Danny Myers asked me in 08 to come to the Big Apple Block Party.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
But that was probably the single biggest thing that took my brand to really kind of put it on the map, getting invited to that. And I'll always be grateful to Kenny. It was Danny's event, but Kenny's the one who gave me the invite.
And that was 2008?
Yeah. Just did my 10th year.
And at that time, had you known like Amy and Mike Mills? Did you know Sam? Did you know those people then?
No, I did. Sam and I. Sam wasn't even going anywhere back then. I think Amy and I and Mike and I had met. What happened was in 07, Ed Mitchell and me and Chris Lilly cooked at a thing in outside of Nashville. And Ed needed some stuff, so we jumped the truck, went to my restaurant, and while we were driving there, Ed was like, "Pat, I got Big Apple next week." I mean, this is literally how it happened. This is like on a Friday, and Big Apple Block Party was the next week in New York. He's like, "I got Big Apple next week. My brother Stevie got caught up in some stuff, and he's my main pit guy, my overnight guy, and he can't go. Will you come cook with me?"
Wow.
Yeah, it's a freaking Big Apple Block Party. I mean, what am I? So I told Ed, I was like, "Yeah, Ed, hell yeah, I'll come up and help you cook. I didn't know how I was going to do it. Get up there." But so anyway, I went up and cooked with Ed, and that's got to know Kenny real well. And then Kenny sent what he and I like to joke around as is some spies down to eat my food. And I guess, you know, test me out, make sure. And so anyway, he did. They liked it. He gave me an, he extended an invite. And man, I showed up. I mean, I had to, couldn't fail. Couldn't embarrass myself, you know. So that was it, man. That was a magical first year.
How quick was it till you opened your second place?
I opened up Mount Juliet. Well, I went up, so I partnered with Mike Bodner in 2010, and he was a graduate of West Virginia University, and we licensed the store up there, and it was a disaster. It was actually a blessing now, because it taught me at a very early stage on what to never do again.
Well, that's great.
You know, it actually opened up really, really strong, like really strong. And me and, I say my team, like I didn't have some big team then. It was me and five of my key guys. And we had to go home, you know, and it was 9 hours away. And they didn't run it right, manage it right. It started failing and we shut it down about 2 years ago. So technically that was the second one, but I really look at the second one as being a company-owned store was east of Nashville in an area called Mount Juliet. We opened it up on July 4th in 2012, which is another thing to never do, is to open up a freaking barbecue joint on July 4th. But, yeah, that was the second
one. I had heard this, and I don't know if this is even something you want to put even. Like, do you own the land for most of your places?
Try to. Again, that's Mike's mentorship.
Okay.
That he recommends is like, let's try to always try to buy our property. That way, that's the be your own landlord. That's my retirement. That's my annuity. So you live off the operations within the restaurant, and you set back your rents that you pay yourself as your own landlord.
Oh, interesting.
To retire off of or to have a secondary income.
Is that almost like I guess that's like a McDonald's type like idea, right? Isn't that kind of how they grew?
Listen, let me tell you this. All of the smart restaurants, they're in the real estate business first. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Yeah.
So there are franchisees of restaurants, I'm sure, that rent do land leases or whatever, but the ones who are really smart, they try to buy where they
can. That's great advice. It's not always easy advice.
Oh. And get your debt paid off in 5 years, and that way your cash flow.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you go from those two to eight? How does that happen?
Real estate opportunities and growing the guys who are with me, trying to give them opportunities. I mean, I'm not a secrets guy. I don't believe in secrets. I do think that they're BS. Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of that comes from old line barbecue joints or maybe competition teams or whatever. I'm not that guy.
Exactly.
And I learned that you can franchise a barbecue restaurant, but it won't be successful. You can't franchise to be proud of it. I don't think.
I agree.
So the only way I could grow was to keep developing my people. And in order to not to lose them, you have to create homes for them and revenue streams for them as well.
True.
So I'm just, you know, in your home market, you don't want to give up too much of your own personal pie that you've risked, and I don't. But as I've grown now, I've got some key people who have been with me for a long time who have earned it, that are starting to write their checks and get in on the deal with.
Of your 8 locations, do you have a baby that you love, or is it the first location? Or
it'll always be Nolensville for me. Yeah. No matter which the building is, we're actually building a new building right next door to my original building, so I'm about to move back across the street again.
Oh, really?
This year, to just because we're still in that 2,400 square foot building, and we've done more business out of that little building than it can handle. So we've beat it up pretty good. So I'm going to move back and build about a 4,500 square foot building that I can be a little more comfortable in. But I would say Nolensville, and then my downtown restaurant. Man, they all, it's like you asking me which one's my favorite kid.
Now, I've heard cool things about your downtown location. I've heard a lot of people love that location.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, we just opened this one up in Birmingham, and I'm so proud of it. I mean, it's just a nice, good, I mean, it's just, they're all great.
How many employees do you have now in the barbecue operation?
Probably shade over 600.
Isn't that crazy? Can you believe that?
No, yeah, it is. Don't even say it. I never thought about it. I never, you know, planned to do this. I don't know, man. I don't know how to say it. I was planning on doing this, but I wasn't planning on doing this. God's really blessed me.
It sounds like it.
It really hasn't.
What's it like going to Sweden?
Well,
I was supposed to go to that, but I got shingles.
Oh, you were?
He invited me to come.
Well, it was awesome because, you know, it's me, Sam, Billy, and Wayne. I mean, we're, you know, all of us. I mean, I know you know this, but we all run very tight. You know, we're all very, very, very good friends and stay in constant. If we all quit the barbecue restaurant, we'd all remain very, very close friends and spend the money and make the time to see each other. So for Billy had put this together the year before, he had been asked, and coming back, he was like, yo, I want to bring Wayne, and they were talking about doing a whole hog, and he was just like, Sam and Pat. So that's how it got put together, and it was unbelievable. Anytime you travel, it's the most underestimated education you can get. I just so recommend people just get out and go see other stuff. But Sweden was really incredible. It was really moving. So much fun. They were so hospitable. Johan and them were just, they're the best.
Yeah, the way Johan describes it just sounds like, and it's kind of out in the, not in the middle of nowhere, but it's away, right? It's not.
No, man, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, it is. Okay.
I mean, when you pull up, you're on a small paved farm road. The two cars can't really, they got to nudge through to fit. And there's this house in this mailbox. And you literally are like you're pulling into your grandmother's house. And you pull right past the house. And then there's all these shipping containers, all the stuff they've constructed this thing.
That's so cool.
And it's asinine. These people go up there and camp out.
They do?
Field next door. So they can go up there and then go there and eat.
I didn't know that.
It's crazy.
Ah, that's so cool.
I don't mean like one or two tents. I mean like there's a lot of people that camp out. Like it was mind blowing.
And how long, like, do they just eat multiple days? Is that like it's a thing?
I think they go up there and camp out and there the next day and eat as much as they can and just go to sleep, the food come off and leave. I don't know. No. They weren't hippies, like they were like professional people. Sleeping in a tent. I don't know.
It's a Swedish hippies or something. I don't know. Talking to Johan, it was fascinating in his journey and how passionate he was about our barbecue, which was really great. Yeah, he's just a great guy, and it just seemed like it just seemed like a neat trip. You went to Noma, and which is a lot of people's bucket list restaurant too.
Yeah, it was great. That restaurant. I mean, I've got a couple friends that work there, and Renee came to the table. He was doing their vegetarian season, and we knew that and wanted to eat that. And he was like, Renee came to the table, and he was like, "Boys, this is one of the hardest meals I think I've ever had to prepare because I don't know how to prepare a vegetarian menu for a bunch of freaking American barbecue guys." And we're like, "Shut your mouth! This is exactly what we wanted to eat. Bring it! Bring your magic!" And he did. So it's great.
That's so neat. So how did the burger thing? How'd that pop up?
So take you back when I was, you know, again, I hadn't worked in the restaurant business and I didn't have any preconceived notions or anything, any of these like dogmatic rules that you had to live by or operate by. And I would run out, try to every night. And when people, what I noticed is that I wasn't treating, I always had a burger on my menu and always had some chicken tenders, but I wasn't treating those with the same amount of respect I was treating my barbecue.
Okay.
So when you came in and drove 25 minutes from Nashville on a Saturday night, you got there, you're all excited, and I've run out of everything. And now you've either got to drive back to Nashville and go find something to eat, or you've got to eat, you know, what else I've got on the menu that's non-barbecue.
Gotcha.
What I noticed is that if nobody ever gets pissed off, they get aggravated if you run out. And they may even say they're not going to come back, but they'll always come back.
Yeah.
They will not come back. It sucks. Or they might give you another chance.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do was, is that if I had to make you settle for a cheeseburger, I wanted that burger to be as good a cheeseburger. I wanted it to surprise you.
Yeah.
You know, so I started working on that at Martin's, you know, my burger, my mom and my grandmother's fried chicken, my catfish that my papa used to fry on our carport on Saturday nights. And my grandmother made cush puppy sauce. Got my mom and my grandmother, got all of it, got up my game, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, and to this day, I'm very proud of those items. And so what happened was that we started looking for real estate, like with you, baby, or for Martin's. A lot of the real estate would be great real estate, but it wasn't a Martin's site.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like it just didn't feel like it was supposed to be a Martin's, right? And so I looked at Bodner and I was like, I want to put something together a lot like the old joints, the old spots, shops back around Memphis and North Mississippi, West Tennessee. So they all use, everybody talks about smash burgers like California invented them. Yes, I mean, everybody makes griddle burgers everywhere. You know?
Exactly, yeah. Texas everywhere, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, so I put together this concept that I remember fast food being good, not crappy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's the best meal you ever had, but I remember, I don't know how old you are, I'm 46.
I'm 48.
I remember when you went to Wendy's, that was like, oh, we're going to Wendy's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it was a hearty meal. It felt hearty. And
yeah, but the quality, just, I don't remember anybody ever telling me it was. I just remember thinking Wendy's was better.
Uh-huh, for sure.
And anyway, I told my, you know, I wanted to open up a fast food restaurant with barbecue, just barbecue sandwiches, Memphis style, because I was born in Memphis, and cheeseburgers, and that's it. And I named it after my Uncle Hugh, baby. And so that's what we did. You know, that way it gave us an opportunity when we found real estate that wasn't a Martin's, that, you know, more than likely it was something we could stick maybe a Hugh Baby's in. And we're still, it's still very young in the game. Got a couple locations, two or three coming down the pike. But I'm trying to get this brand birthed a lot like I did Martin's 12 years ago.
How's the response been?
Oh, it's been great.
Yeah,
it's been great. But my standards are the same. Like, I didn't want Hugh Babies to have anything to do with Martin's Barbecue. I didn't want people to look at it like P.F. Chang's and Payway, you know?
Yeah.
So all of it, all the recipes are completely different. But the standards are still there. What I mean by that is we cook whole shoulders there. We cook them every day, try to run out every day. And our burgers, we buy in primals and cube them and grind them on site twice a day to make the burgers before each service. So it's a lot of extra hard work, but man, that shows up in your sales.
No, and it shows up with probably a lot of repeat customers. It sounds like a place I go to all the time.
There's nothing special. Like, I don't have some special sauce or some, you know, whatever. It's all about trying to execute at the highest level I can execute.
And they're sit-down locations, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The one that we built over on Charlotte, it's got a drive-thru. I mean, it's. I'm going to build them to be fast food restaurants, you know, with drive-thrus. Very much in the drive-thru business.
So it sounds like you could probably have more than eight of Hugh babies for sure, I would think.
That's another issue, is that Martin's is a tugboat, you know, because I'm not going to go franchise them. So we're not, I don't have an amount in mind that we're going to open up. I mean, we may open up two more and that's it, or we may open up 20 more, I don't know. But it won't be some massive amount, just because they're so hard to run, you know. I mean, we don't have a freezer or microwave, and we make every single thing from scratch every day. That's not a model that you can replicate real easy. Hugh babies, we still make everything from scratch every day, but the menu is 20 times smaller. So that's something that I might can franchise one day. Somebody can actually operate it with and run it and uphold the operational integrity of the brand. You know what I'm saying? Martin's,
they can't. Yeah, Martin's is its own animal. Yeah. So that's crazy. Well, it's so interesting, your path. It's not that everyone has an unusual path to their success in the barbecue business, but it sounds like you've had a very unique one, and it sounds like you never really expected it. You probably wanted all of this. Like there's certain things, like you had desires and dreams, but you're so humble about it. I really appreciate that. Like, I'm sure a lot of people.
I appreciate it, because let me tell you something, it can all go away tomorrow. So I'll never forget the 95 hour work weeks and trying to figure out how I was going to pay this bill or that bill. And it can all go away tomorrow. I say it a lot that, you know, a lot of people can cook great barbecue. I mean, a lot of people can cook unbelievably great barbecue in their backyards. And of course, the thing is, that's why I said at the beginning of the interview, I was the dumbass that everybody would slap on the back and say, you should open up a barbecue restaurant. Everybody gets told that, and let me tell you, it's a whole another.
It's completely game. Yeah. The restaurant business is tough.
That's it, because you're not cooking romantically on Saturday nights for your buddies anymore. You're cooking for people who are looking for a reason to not like what you're doing or something, you know, and like employees, customers. Like, it's just are you sure that's really what you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because it can take the love out of it real quick if you're not careful.
And you have to replicate that every day.
Every day. Every single day.
Are you having fun now?
Yeah, I am having fun. It's hard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm having fun. I love teaching these guys how to do it. And, you know, we're just going through my pits down in Birmingham and sitting down with these guys. You know, they've been... Three of these guys have been training up in Nashville for I don't even know how long. And then there were a couple other new guys on there, and you know, they just all have their notepads out and we're taking notes and we're just walking through, you know, trying to identify ulcers and old blood. And it's fun to make money too.
Yeah. Well, it's fun to accomplish things. It definitely is. There's something about hard work that, and when it pays off, it actually does feel really good.
That's right.
Is there somewhere in Nashville, like a little secret spot that you love, a place that you go to that's not barbecue, that's not hamburgers, that you could recommend to someone? Like, hey, if you're coming to Nashville, make sure you go to this place.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big list, but, you know, are you asking just for a dive, or are you asking for, like, a chef-driven restaurant?
More of a dive.
Mas Tacos. Yeah, I would go to Teresa's spot, Mas Tacos. Hattie B's. I'd hit Hattie B's. Definitely hit Hattie B's. Get some hot chicken.
Do you find that unusual? I guess it makes sense that swept the nation, and there's big places in Los Angeles and everywhere else now.
It makes absolutely zero sense to all of us in Nashville.
Does it?
I don't know if it's just that just was a great brand, but like, I can't go eat that hot stuff. Me and this chef, one of my very close friends, Tandy Wilson, won James Beard a couple of years ago at City House.
Yeah.
And, you know, we go to Hattie B's, man, and like, I can only eat the mild. The mild is hot. It's hot. And it's unbelievably great fried chicken. But these people who go into Hattie B's or Prince's and get like the hot,
it's crazy.
I would never do that.
Someone was asking me recently, like, why do people eat it so hot?
I don't have any idea, because it's I can't explain it in this interview. It is literally unadulterated, pure misery. There's nothing about eating that is enjoyable at all.
No.
You got people who came in. Let me tell you this. David Chang, this is like 6, 7. He and Sean had just gone to French's and eaten the extra hot.
Okay.
And he got to my place on Belmont. And I'm going to tell you what, he almost had to go to the hospital. He was throwing up in the bushes outside. I was giving him Pepsi Completes, and like, he was killing it.
Wow.
And that's how bad that stuff is. Seriously.
I forgot that was Sean with him. Okay, yeah, on Ugly Delicious. But I think they kind of talked a little bit about that, but I didn't know they went to your place.
What he was in town for, but they came over to Martin's to eat after that, and that poor bastard couldn't get his breath.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he has. I don't think he's ever eaten it that hot again. I don't know.
Well, it doesn't make sense. It's not that enjoyable at that heat, that temperature.
No, I don't think so. No, it's not.
Well, you're starting to. It's amazing. Just so I could tell people, where were you driving during this interview?
Driving back from Savannah Food and Wine Festival.
On what highway?
It's my son's 13th birthday, and I promised him I would get home tonight. When I agreed to do it, they're always on Saturdays, and for some reason this was on Sunday, and I couldn't back out of it. I'd given him my word I would do it, and it made me miss his birthday today, and I will never do that again.
Is he in the car? Is that who's in the car with you?
No, this is Aaron Frazier in the car. He's asleep because he was up at 4:30.
We'll tell him thank you.
Yeah, he's got to drive a little bit, but he can't hear me right now.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate you taking the time and squeezing it in. I definitely am sorry I couldn't do it yesterday because of the fires.
No, man, I appreciate it, and I'm sorry I know we've been trying to do this for a while. And,
that's okay.
You know, thanks for being patient.
Hey, no, I've been looking forward to this for you don't know how long, I can't wait to meet you in person someday.
Yeah, come to Nashville sometime, man, if you can.
I will for sure. This next year for sure. Have a great evening.